From Adams Morgan to Anacostia Park, we all want safer neighborhoods. But what does real safety mean? Real safety means preventing crime before it happens. By having police work with communities to disrupt cycles of violence. By supporting families with stable housing. And providing more mental health and drug treatment. We know that adding more police and locking up more people doesn't make us safer. Real safety means investing in the things that help prevent crime. Learn more at RealSafetyDC.
Welcome, everybody. Today I've got former head coach Jim Mora, 25-year NFL coach, including a couple stints as the HC, and then the last 6 years at UCLA that ended a few years ago. And Jim and I both continue to plow forward in a very positive way. We spend a lot of time in Sun Valley together. That's where we both have homes. We train a lot. And like all things in life, we all go through bumps. And the question becomes, what are you going to do about those things that hit you hard? I think one of the things that we all go through things, as I said, but right now we're talking about COVID-19. We're going through a tough time. Everybody is. We're all sharing the pain. And, you know, just in terms of this word, Jim, I want to start off with a quote that I saw today. And that is this whole thing about embracing uncertainty. So I'm going to put that up on the board. Embrace uncertainty. Some of the most beautiful chapters in our lives won't have a title until much later. So tell me from your standpoint, you know, you've gone through some adversity in your life where you've had to move on from one team to another. And then I want to roll that up to what you're doing right now to prepare as we all emerge out of this COVID-19 awful situation around the globe.
Well, it is certainly a time of uncertainty all around the globe for many, many people, and a lot of hardship and death and sick and some tough things. But I believe that as human beings, there is a strength to us that allows us to overcome. And I think, you know, this concept of embracing uncertainty is very difficult. It's very difficult. It runs counter to who we are, what we believe. But it's so important right now, because if you don't embrace the uncertainty and look for the good in what's happening, you're going to spiral. And I see so many great things happening. Now, listen, every death is a horrible death. Every sickness is a horrible sickness. Every job loss is tragic. But I also see families spending more time together. I see fathers, absentee fathers, spending more time with their kids and building relationships back. And I think that, you know, you say some of the most beautiful chapters in our lives won't happen until much later. I think that there's going to be a compounding effect to what this COVID-19 has allowed us to create in terms of the family. I also think it's forcing to communicate in different ways, reach out, look for help, look for systems of support. So it's hard to do, Mark. You know that. I mean, you know, when you're feeling down, it's tough to find a bright spot. But to do that, I've always loved this quote, Mark. I'll tell it to you, and it's adverse turns weak people into victims and strong people into competitors. Because, you know, and we're all going to go through adversity, different types in our life, you know, different levels. But weak people shrivel, you know, lay on their couch and watch TV or hide or look for an out. And it takes a strength. It takes a strength of character to compete in adverse times and believe in yourself and believe in your vision and believe in the people around you and continue to push forward when times like the whole world is pushing you. So, you know, while I would acknowledge, you know, the horrible tragedies that are occurring at this time, there's a silver lining. There's a silver lining. Sometimes it's hard for me to talk about the silver lining because I don't want to down people who are going through, but it's so important that you focus on the right things. Focus on positive. Say, you know what? Yeah, I'm going through a tough time, but what can I learn from it? And how can I apply that going forward? And how can this be a great chapter in my life? How can I take something so horrible and turn it into something so spectacular?
So let's talk specifically, because I was right there with you. I know Tiger Hagen is watching the podcast today, the live stream. Appreciate that. Always Tiger support. But he and I were on the sidelines as you had to transition out from UCLA, something you'd done such a phenomenal job, in my opinion, Tiger's opinion, on building up that community, building up the team, having a record-setting amount of money pour in from Under Armour, building a new facility there. I mean, it was just really amazing what you were able to accomplish and have all these NFL players or college players go on to the NFL and succeed in a big-time way that they hadn't seen in a lot of years. And so, again, now you're going through adversity, right, which wasn't fun to go through. And now going back to that first quote about embracing uncertainty as you're going through adversity and not knowing what's ahead of you, but there's some wonderful thing that I don't know if it's 10 years from now. I don't know. It's 2 years from now because you've been out of college football. And I also want to remind everybody that Jim is a analyst for ESPN covering college football. And I don't know if that's your path forward. But, you know, again, as you said some beautiful things about how we all should try to look at the world when you go through these things. But how specifically have you taken that personally in terms of how you're trying to emerge out of this situation from being involved, heavily involved in football, coaching these guys up to being on the sidelines at some level? Again, you're at ESPN, but you know, at some level.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm like everybody. I have really good days and I have some challenging days. And, you know, the fight is always to work through those challenging days and make sure the next day is a better day. And I've always been a glasses half full guy, but sometimes that's hard. You know, when you get fired, and I got fired at UCLA, and we'd done some tremendous things over the 6 years that I was there that I'm very, very proud of. Sometimes when you go through adversity, the easy thing to do is point somewhere else and point at somebody else. I think it's very natural. It's his fault. It's her fault. It's their fault. It's the world's fault. It's God's fault. It's whatever. I think that you have to move quickly through that period where you're placing blame at others, and you have to look within. And that doesn't mean that you blame yourself, but you say, okay, how could I have handled this situation better? What could I have done better on every level to make the result different? And as you're doing that, you're also learning for future projects. I hope to coach again. I've learned so much about myself these last 2 years sitting out. That has been wonderful. I've had opportunities to really delve into how I was a coach, how I was as a father, how I was as just a man, a mentor, how I treated people, how I was with the media, what I could do better. So being a glasses half full guy, you know, on those days when it seems like the glass is half empty, I remind myself that I have this amazing opportunity to expand my knowledge base and my career. By working with a tremendous company like ESPN and watch a lot of football, I remind myself of the amazing time that I have now with my family that I wouldn't have when I coached. I remind myself of the amazing time that I have to be able to reconnect with friends that coaching had kind of, you know, limited my ability to do just because of the time commitment. So on those dark days, I think of all the positives. It goes back to your first quote. I don't know what's up next for me. I hope that it's coaching. The reason I love to coach is because I love to have an effect on people. But if it's not coaching, it'll be something else where I can influence people, you know. So it's just, as you said, it's embracing the uncertainty, but it's also learning. It's learning from adversity. It's accepting the challenge of taking a good, hard look at yourself, which is not easy to do. You know, we're a species that kind of wants to blame others. And I think it's important that we take that good, hard look at ourselves. That's what I've tried to do. I think it helps me. You know, I think that I'm in a really good spot because of it. I thank friends like you. You know, and I have another quote I like, Mark. It's just hard things are hard. You know, if you want to be the best, if you want to be your best, here's another thing. When people say the best, I think our goal should all be to be our very best, our best, not the best. So if you want to be the very best that you can be, that's hard. You know, that takes commitment. That takes, you know, you have up there investment commitment versus sacrifice. You know, it takes a commitment. I look at people that say, well, this is a real, if I want to get somewhere, I have to really sacrifice this. No, if you want to get somewhere, you have to make an investment. You have to make a commitment. It's not a sacrifice. A sacrifice to me is not a positive word. It's a negative word, where investment and commitment are powerful, positive words. I'm going to make this investment. I'm going to make this commitment. I didn't like it when players would say, well, I really sacrificed this offseason. No, you didn't sacrifice. You made an investment in yourself. You made a commitment to this team. And so that's what I try to do every day, is make an investment, a commitment in myself and my family and my friends and my future.
I think there's this whole thing about preparation meets opportunity. And I want to take this down even another level right now, which I really appreciate about you. And so when we were talking about what can you do in this last season, I know in addition to your ESPN commitments, you also have kept this book, and it looks like the size of a phone book, right? We don't really get phone books anymore, but what they are. But essentially, you've got every phase of the game that you're able to literally walk into any coach, any SID, sports information director, and hand them that playbook. And that is the kind of the roadmap to success and what you do on day one, from who you'd hire, the type of practices, everything scripted out by minute, by hour, the entire day, 365 days of the year. It's super impressive. And so as you were talking about that, you know, what can you do? I know that this last season, there were a couple opportunities. They didn't plan out or play out the way that you wanted them to play out. But still, you put yourself in that spot where you didn't walk in and you were being reactive to what they were asking you in questions. You came in and say, hey, look, this is my track record. This is what I've done. And if you were to hire me, this is what's going to happen. And this is
starting tomorrow.
Starting tomorrow, literally. And that was, and so I think it's a lesson for all of us. Again, when we're talking about COVID-19 and everybody's on the sideline right now, like, how do you get back in the game of life? And what are you going to do to prepare yourself when that moment happens? And now we're recording this on May 1st. So this is May Day.
Right.
Happy May Day to Tom Adams, Richard Proctor, the rest of you guys that are out there that are listening. Thank you. But it's really
an opportunity to think about.
Yeah, I know. I want to. I'm just putting a bow on it, which is, you know, there are things that you do that you're not thinking about that can propel you once we come out. Go ahead.
Really interesting, Mark. So, you know, you said that preparation meets opportunity, and you don't always control opportunity, but you do control preparation. You can always be ready. You can always be learning. You can always be trying to get better. You know, for me as a coach, you know, I've always kept, as you know, a lot of information, stored a lot of information, always had a plan in place. When I got let go at UCLA, it had been very easy for me to just say, well, heck with it. You know, forget about that. Somebody else's fault. Those things I talked about earlier. Instead, you know, I went back through, as you say, my notebook. And my notebook is basically my plan of action. And it's what, you know, it's got calendars, it's got staffing, it's got philosophy, it's got player development, it's got off-field development, player program. It's got everything that you really need to do to run a college or even an NFL program. And I said, you know what, we need to go back and update that and constantly update it, because I was learning things every day. And so I went and I put my book together with the thought that, hey, you know what, if an opportunity comes up, if an interview presents itself for a team that I'm interested in, I need to be ready. I can't get ready. I have to stay ready. And you've heard that. It's not about getting ready. It's about staying ready. So I had put this book together, and it just so happens, this is funny, is I was at the national championship game in New Orleans, and I had taken this book with me. And if you read this book, you really probably wouldn't even need to interview me. You could just kind of look through it and go, okay, this is what this guy's about. So I've got it in my backpack. And I'm getting on the plane, and all of a sudden I get a text from a friend who says, hey, an AD, the AD of this, you know, school A, who is looking for a head coach, is on your plane. They just got on your plane and walked by you. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And well, I had a little bit of an interest in at least exploring that opportunity. So, you know, you have Wi-Fi on the plane. So while we're flying across from New Orleans back to LA, I'm texting, I'm getting his number from a common friend. I'm texting him in the back of the plane because I don't know what he looks like. He texts me back and he says, can we meet when the plane lands in LA? I say, yes. I wait. He steps off the plane. He's got to run to another plane to get home. And I say, hey, I know we don't have time to talk, but I'm going to give you this book. And this book kind of spells out, you know, my philosophy, you know, my game plan, my blueprint for running a program. If you're not interested in talking to me any further, at least you have it. Maybe you can get some good ideas out of it. And I handed it to him, and he called me a day later and said, hey, can we get together and talk? I'd like to come to LA and talk to you about becoming our head coach. Now, it wasn't something that was mutually agreeable at the time, so we didn't go that way. But what a, to me, a really great example of preparation meets opportunity. If I wasn't prepared, if I didn't have that book, that opportunity would just slip right through my fingers. So I think that's kind of a compelling story right there.
Well, I mean, look, you got to keep grinding. You got to keep grinding. I want to give a quick shout out to Gordo. He's asking about all your roses. Hey, Gordo's asking about the roses in the background. And big shout out to Dr. Kristen W. We chatted the other day on a podcast. She was amazing. But I want to transition just a little bit because I think all these things have ties. And that tie would be when we start talking about the great John Wooden, his pyramid of success. And you go through these 25 individual team blocks and you get to the very top rung. And it can be for a business. It can be for becoming a medical student. It can be for an athletic team. It really doesn't matter, you know, what that's for. But Jim, tell us what is at the very, very tippy top, that last rung when you hit that pinnacle. What word is that?
Well, it's called the pyramid of success, and how he defines success is success is a peace of mind, which is the direct result and self-satisfaction and knowing you did your best to become the very best you're capable of becoming. But it's competitive greatness, and competitive greatness competitive greatness, Mark, is being at your best when your best is needed or when your best is required. He says needed. And I think it's times like this where people need to be at their best. It's a struggle. That's why I said hard things are hard earlier. It's so easy to give in. It's so easy to give in, but to succeed and success is, like I said, it's being the best that you can be, not being the best. It's reaching your full potential. It's hard. It takes commitment. It takes an investment. It takes a dedication. And if you go through John Wooden's, as you do and I do, his building blocks, it all leads to that. You know, it's not that you just all of a sudden you're at your best when your best is required because you decide to be. No, it's a process that you have to go through. And you've explained that very well in a lot of your podcasts. But these are times right now that I think demand that we find a way. We find a way to get out of any funk we're in or any sense of self that we're defeated and be the best that we can be for ourselves and those around us. And I think people are rising to the occasion. I really do. I that's the sense that I get. In not all cases, but you just got to keep, man. Tell you what, man, you got to fight. You got to fight. You got to be that guy that says, hey, this adversity is going to turn me into a strong, competitive son of a gun.
Well, look, I've got this quote up there. It takes a little more to make a champion. And that's something that I throw at my
kids. You've been saying that forever.
I've been saying that since both my girls were a very young age. I want to go back to that word competitive greatness, you know, again, through the top rung of the pyramid of success. And what that means to me, and I know what it means to you, is that you really got to love the process because you can't go to the top. You have to go and weave all your way. And then sometimes that may take years and years and years. That happened for me at the University of Washington playing football. You had much earlier success than I did. And I had to develop my mind, my body, my soul to put myself in a position to one day got drafted in the NFL, but to just to play at the University of Washington, right? And so I think part of that, it's not all of it, it's part of that, is when you start talking about training your mind and becoming mentally tough, right? So you can endure it because you're going to have hits along the way, right? You're going through a hit. You went through a hit a couple of years ago with UCLA. I've had my own share of hits. I probably am the king of having hits. But I believe that what works for me doesn't have to work for everybody. And I know it works for you because you're my training partner in Sun Valley. And that is that pushing yourself to a level that you haven't gone to create a strong body, which then will create a strong mind. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I agree with you completely. One of the things that I've really enjoyed seeing is more and more people out working out, whether that be walking or biking or jogging or holding hands with their wife and, you know, walking the hills up here in Palos Verdes. I think a healthy body and a healthy mind go together. Not always, but in most cases. And I think it keeps us alive. People talk about endorphins and, you know, getting out. And when you start to feel a little pain and you're running, your endorphins kick in. And all of a sudden, I feel like your creative process opens up for you. I know that I do a lot of my best thinking. Not saying it's good thinking, but my best thinking, you know, when I'm working out. I feel inspired. And I know that's the way you are as well. And so I would encourage people to do that. Then going back to your statement, if it takes a little more to make a champion, I think that it's sometimes we have to be careful how we define champion. And I'll go back to John Wooden. And one of the things I loved about John Wooden is he was an amazing success, but he always talked about really being your best. So can you be a champion today? Can you be a champion of what you're trying to do? And that's going to take a little bit more. It's going to take a little bit different attitude, maybe a little bit different work ethic, maybe more patience than you've ever had with your family, maybe better understanding of the people around you and some of the things they're going through. But I think you, just like I, every day we get up and we set goals. We set goals for ourselves on a daily basis. I know I do, and I know you do. And it may be very simple goals some days. And some days they may be very, very difficult goals, whether they're physical goals or emotional goals or job goals. So that to me is something that you do. And every day, keep track if you achieve those goals or not. What kind of dad are you? What kind of husband are you? What kind of friend are you? What kind of person are you? What kind of worker are you? Are you dependable? Do a little bit more. Be your own champion every day.
Well, you know, look, when they talk about work out, it's not play out, it's workout, right?
Right.
And so it takes a little more to make a champion, because it does take the extra effort to make the leap to be successful in real estate, in law, in many of these other things. And by the way, before I forget, I want to give a quick shout out to one of your coaches that's watching this live, Dalton Hilliard. He's done a great – yeah, Coach Hilliard is on the live broadcast. And so a little shout out for Dalton. But, you know, I know that for me, I was working out with a bear, you know, in preparation for Mount Everest. And that just takes such a hardcore mindset. And then when things get shifted and, you know, I put so much time to it and I was thinking about I've seen literally every YouTube video. I know every inch, I think, you know, going up the mountain, what's going to happen, how it's going to happen and play out. And then all of a sudden the whole world blows up, right? And this, I have to put my glasses on to read this, but train your mind to see the good in everything. Positivity is a choice. The happiness of your life depends on the quality of your thoughts. So things happen to all of us. You know, I'm not unique to that. You're not unique to that. Anybody who's listening on this, you know, sometimes life just is life and it takes crazy turns, but it's how you really want to set your mind upon looking at the positive and at things versus sitting just in that pool of kind of the Debbie Downer, poor me, the victim mentality, because that never gets you anywhere that you want to go, you know? So for me, you know, was I bummed out? Yes, I was. And it took me about 24 hours and I reshifted my whole mindset. It was just like, you know what? This is not canceled. It's not canceled at all. It's postponed. And then the opportunity is to get better. It's to get stronger. It's to climb that mountain in some valley, which you and I have all kinds of different courses that we go up and down, getting up and down. I mean, just like, what can I do to take myself to a place that I've never been? I thought I had been to that place. I'm going to take myself to a place that I don't even know I've been. Right. But it's that whole mindset to be able to take something like that on.
Well, you've kind of epitomized the quote that you have at the bottom of the screen there. The happiness of your life depends on the quality of your thoughts. You know, it was about 24 hours. I got a text from you and you said, I need to recalibrate. And then the next thing I know is you're talking about, this just gives me more time to prepare and to plan. And now we can go to Utah and climb the highest peak in Utah and Montana. And we can go up Bora in Idaho. And next year, maybe you can be on, you know, Everest with me. So you decided and you made the choice. So we can't always control what happens to us, but we can absolutely control how we react to them. We have control over our attitude. We have control over our effort. We have control over the way we treat people. And those are the things that I always preach to my kids, is you have control of your attitude and your effort and your work ethic and the way you treat people. You can't control what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis. That's oftentimes in somebody else's hands. But how you handle it, how you deal with it, that really defines to me your character. And I know they say adversity builds character and all that. It's not always adversity. It's how you react to positive things. It's how you react to negative things. It's how you react to disappointments, you know, like you had where, I mean, your goal was 30 skins up the mountain and you hit 34, I think. And you were as ready as a guy can be. You were emotionally ready. You were mentally ready. You were absolutely physically ready. I was there training with you. And all of a sudden, boom, you get hit in the mouth. And yeah, you were down understand you're down, but how long are you going to stay? You know, and it's like, we're all going to get, it's just the cliche of cliches. I mean, how we're all going to get knocked down. Okay. But the great ones, the positive ones, the influential ones, they just keep getting back up. You just keep getting back up. You just keep getting back up. I get knocked down to try to, you know, you might take a knee there. You might wait for the, you know, the count to get to 8, but before they hit 10, man, you got to get back on your feet and keep fighting, readjust your attitude, readjust your focus. But never necessarily readjust the goal. And the goal for you is to summit Everest, and you'll do it.
So I just looked on the, in the chat above, and there's a longtime friend, Lenny Millard, and, she's a dear friend, and I believe her son just got a scholarship. I'm probably saying this wrong, but somewhere in Montana, and he's transitioning from a very hard senior year going into to your freshman year. And I just want to, we've got a couple people on here, you know, in the coaching world. So from just speaking directly to Lynn, and you've been so successful in bringing in recruits. I think he might be going to Montana State or someplace. He went to Seattle Prep and had a very successful run, and now he's going to the next level, right? And so what is your, like, key advice to people that are making that kind of transition from, I know you put a lot of work into it when you're in high school, it's a little loosey-goosey compared to when you go to the next level at college where, you know, to these coaches, they're being paid full-time salaries to, like, turn out a product or they're gone, right?
Yeah, well,
what's your advice?
Well, you know, it's still considered a game, but it's you've just entered into the world of business. And the expectations and the demands that are going to be put on you are far greater than any you've ever had in your athletic career. And I say embrace that. I say it's a lot of pressure, but pressure is a privilege. You've attained something through your work ethic, through your talent, through your attitude, your mindset that has allowed you to get a scholarship to go play college football. And there's a lot of pressure with that. But, man, what a privilege it is to be in that situation. And I've always loved that. You know, I've loved that you have attitude reflects leadership. I can talk about that, too. But just the pressure, embrace it. It's a privilege. It's a privilege that you've earned. You know, when I talk to young kids, Mark, that are getting ready to go to college, and I often do it in the lacrosse world as well as the football world, is I talk about going into college and being aware of what I call the four poisons. And the four poisons are the things that I think can absolutely decimate a career and even a life if you allow them to creep into your world. And those things are specifically for male athletes are sexual misconduct. You know, I talk about that a lot with young kids. And since we're talking to Lenny, I'll just say that sexual misconduct, if you're accused of it, you can never outrun it as a young man, whether it's something you did, which obviously then you shouldn't do it, or if you're falsely accused. So never put yourself in a situation where you can bring that upon yourself, because you do control that. The second thing is drugs of abuse. You know, it's so easy to fall into the trap of, well, I'm just going to try it, or the, you know, the peer pressure. Drugs of abuse bring you down in a heartbeat. You know, I talk to college kids about academic integrity. You know, in high school, sometimes you take the shortcut and you put yourself in a situation where maybe you have to, your eyes have to go to someone else's paper. If you do that in college, you know, there's a chance that you're going to get kicked out of school and your career is over. And then the fourth one, and, you know, we're using it right now, but just social media can just kill you. I mean, if you are not careful about what you post or what you like or what you repost, and every time that you hit the button to post something or repost something or like something, then you're endorsing it. And I hope that, you know, Lenny, as you go through your college career, you recognize that you have a responsibility to make sure you make the right decisions for yourself, because you've earned this position that you're going into at Montana or Montana State or wherever it is. Doesn't matter. They're both great schools. So protect it. Protect it with a passion.
That's awesome. I know that probably goes for everybody. I mean, we're talking about young kids doing irresponsible things, and we've all done something that we're probably not proud of. But I mean, again, it's the success leaves clues, and you should never leave that behind. And I think really one of the things that has worked well for me is trying to emulate some people that are doing great things. From, you know, college football when I was just a young guy, and watching a guy like Tom Flick, who was our quarterback, who took us to the Rose Bowl He was a senior, but he just led life and his training regimen and the way he approached the game, that level that I had to learn. I didn't have that. And then from there, going into the NFL, and there's a lot of guys, you know, from Howie Long to Marcus Allen and those guys that were rock stars, but they were rock stars for a certain reason about the way that they trained and they treated their body. And then, you know, for me, there's different businesses. And then now being involved with Sports Illustrated and Climbing Mountains, I mean, each one of these, I would not have moved to Sun Valley, I can tell you with 100% clarity, if I hadn't bumped into a famous mountaineer, Lou Whitaker. And he just like changed my world. No, he has no idea that it changed my world. But growing up with him in the Northwest, he's somebody that I really idolized about the way he led his life of mountaineering, the craft that he learned, you know, over time. Let's go back to your NFL days. You're in the NFL 25 years. Give me a couple key stories. And there's a guy that he's a common friend of both mine and yours that you coach when you're at the San Francisco 49ers, Ronnie Lott. I want you to talk about his kind of approach to the game and what really has transitioned out to his approach in life.
I will say this about Ronnie. I got the great pleasure of meeting Ronnie when I was in high school. My dad was recruiting him to the University of Washington. He ended up going to USC. And as we all know, he had a great career there, great career in the NFL, Hall of Famer, now a successful businessman. But and you know Ronnie. Ronnie never compromises his standards. And I think that is one of the things that makes him so successful. That doesn't mean that he can't be fluid and he can't be flexible, but he doesn't compromise what he believes in, and what he believes in has worked for him. He treats people with great respect, with dignity. He's always honest. And going and talked about, you know, Mark being around Howie Long and Marcus and those guys. In my NFL career, I was fortunate to be around, I believe it's 30 members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And they were all talented. Everyone in the NFL is talented, has physical gifts. But what made the great ones great and what made the great ones Hall of Famers was their mindset, the standards they held themselves to and the standards they held other people to, the work ethic that was beyond reproach, that once again, they never compromised. It was just part of their being. I would say that you have that with regards to your mountain climbing now. You don't take days off. You don't give yourself a break. You hold yourself to the highest standard. And as a leader, because you act that way, because they acted that way, because they were always prepared, because they were the first in and the last out, and they were the best players, it forced others on the team to emulate that, to be a part of that. And that's why, you know, they talk about attitude reflects leadership. When you're around a guy like Ronnie Lott, it's perpetual optimism combined with a strength of character and a moral compass that just never wavers, that creates this attitude and this infectious personality that you want to be around. You know, people talk about culture a lot, you know, in the NFL, in sports or in business, you know, what's your culture? And I think a lot of people think culture is just a static thing that the boss says, hey, this is our culture. This is who we're going to be. But culture's not static. Culture is dynamic. Culture is changing all the time. And culture is created by what the people in your organization, every single one of them, what they think, what they say, and what they do each and every day. And Ronnie and some others at the 49ers, Jerry and Joe and Steve and all those guys, Kenny Norton, Gary Plummer, Tim McDonald, you know, all those guys, they created a culture that was dynamic by the way they acted every day. That's why guys like that in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, there are more talented players than Ronnie Lott. There are more athletic men than Ronnie Lott, faster, bigger, stronger. Heck, there's as hard of hitters. But I've never seen anybody that had the combination of all the qualities it takes to be great and to affect people around him. And to create a culture that people want to be a part of. And then to teach how to act within that culture.
Yeah, I know. One of the things you talked about was commitment. And I think no matter what you do, again, it gets back to the commitment of the daily discipline of getting an effort after whatever you're trying to get after, right?
And you're not your mind when you go up the mountain, when you're going through that pain and your lungs are burning and your thighs are dying. And we're standing there, you know, going, hey, do we keep going? Hell yeah, we keep going, you know, and let's go a little bit faster. That's not a sacrifice for you. That's an investment. That's a commitment to make sure that when you're on Mount Everest and you're going up the ice fall, or going through the ice fall, you're going up through the Kumba ice fall and up the Lhotse face, that you know you've put in the work in, that you know you've made the investment, that you know you've made the commitment. Not, oh man, I made all these sacrifices for this. Hell no, I made a commitment, man. I made a freaking investment. I'm ready to go.
Back to running Lotta really, really quick. Talk about commitment, investment. You know, share the story when he cut off his finger. It was a moment in time where he had to deal with his finger situation, or he couldn't play.
Right. You know, and I mean, there's all kinds of versions of the story, but the bottom line is this: is that Ronnie had an injury to his finger, and it was basically hanging there. And he could choose to have surgery, but if he had surgery, then he'd have a splint. It would probably be, you know, taped to this. And he, because of surgery, he'd probably miss a game, maybe two. And he asked the doctor, well, you know, what's the alternative? And the doctor says, well, we can cut it off. And I'm sure the doctor was joking. He said, we can cut it off. And Rice says, what happens if we cut it off? Well, then we just bandage it up and you can play. And Rice says, cut it off. He cut it off. Cut it off. It meant that much to him. So, you know, if you ever get a chance to meet Ronnie Lott, you look at his finger and he's missing the tip of his finger. You talk about, and maybe that's a little bit more of a sacrifice, but he made that decision for many of the reasons I'd said. He made a commitment to never lowering his standard, always hold himself accountable, being a positive leader, setting a standard for the whole team. And dang, I'll tell you what, that right there, that will affect attitude.
It will affect attitude. And I can tell you from somebody who actually went across the middle and got blasted by a French raid, Ronnie Lott. It's great. It's very fun to be able to call him a friend today and to say that I never have to go and get hit by him again. At least that's my hope. Secret prayer. But all right, well, look, we've covered a lot of ground. I think we've got this little banner that's on the board right now. It says attitude reflects leadership. A guy who, you know, well, famous UCLA player, went on drafted in the first round, I think in 1979, to the Philadelphia Eagles. Jerry Robinson later traded, was my teammate at the Raiders. And when I called him the first time and said, hey, Jerry, you know, you're on the podcast, how you doing? And he goes, I go, how are you feeling? He goes, every day I wake up with an attitude of gratitude. And I think if we could go out there and sprinkle that magic dust around the planet, and as we go through these challenging times, and they're tough. I mean, we're not trying to minimize any of this, but try to, like, what is the beauty in all the ugliness and the people passing away and businesses shutting down? You know, what can I get out of this? How am I going to get to the other side? Because you know what? You will get to the other side. It happens every single time. And when I'm in those tough situations up on these crazy ass mountains and people are giving up, people are quitting, you know, I just know that if I can just wait it out, if I can wait it out and somehow or another get through that night when it's minus 40 degrees, I'm sleeping on the ice, that I can get to the other side. And I believe everybody has the ability to get to the other side. So again, that attitude of gratitude of what you're thankful for, getting into the other side, making big goals and going after them, to me, is the key to success.
Keep fighting. And I know sometimes the word fight has a negative connotation. So, but keep believing, keep striving. Maybe keep striving is better in these times than keep fighting. And boy, there's some serious obstacles that a lot of people are having to overcome. I mean, the death of loved ones, the loss of jobs, the anxiety of the future, the pressure of staying home and trying to homeschool while also do your job. I mean, those are things that that are real. But in there is a silver lining. In there is opportunities to grow as human beings, to grow as fathers, as mothers, as partners. Mark, it's all about what you said, though. It's gratitude. It's finding gratitude in a really difficult situation.
Listen, I think we've come to the end of the first ever broadcast live on Finding Your Summit. This will be an ongoing series that we're going to do. This will be also thrown up on my podcast. But I think it's great. You know, I have all these amazing people like Jim that come on the pod. And I think there's a different experience when you actually see somebody visually, a different engagement than you do when you just listen to them. My podcast, these guests that I have on are incredible. Jim, I just got a quick test from Gary Pinkel, the former coach of Missouri. So we're going to line him up in the next week or two to get him live. And good. So people can hear, you know, what he's been going through. He had overcome a cancer scare, which actually made him resign from as a head guy at Missouri, one of the most successful coaches ever at that school. Way back when we were playing at the University of Washington, he was one of the assistant coaches, my wide receiver coach, quarterback coach, and then went on to greater things in his career. So anyways, I appreciate everybody coming on. Jim, you've been amazing as always. Thank you. And any last things you want to say?
Yeah, adopt that, as you said, attitude of gratitude, and be tough and be strong. And if you're the leader of a family, well, we're all leaders. We all play a leadership role in somebody's life. Remember, how we react, how we handle things is going to affect the attitude and the perspective of those around us. So try to make sure that it's a positive influence that we give off.
Right on. All right. There he is, the coach, Jim Mora. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. See ya.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.